This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
Well, we've had a long and fruitful relationship, but it looks like I'm breaking up with Bitly. Bitly is one of these link shortening services. There are a bunch of them that I've used forever as a way. And by the way, why does Twitter make you go to another app or service to get a shorter link? If Twitter had any sense, Twitter would provide the link shortening on its own. I think it does it now, but lately. Anyway, not only has it become cluttered and clunky and you got an X out of an ad and so forth, but two or three times in the last 10 days, I've tried to post something. Usually, you know, it has an image for my column or a video segment that I was on, or video segment for Media Buzz. And I get a message saying Bitly will not allow this to be posted. Like, I don't need any more digital nannies in my life telling me what I can and cannot do. The first time I thought, well, maybe it's a rights issue or something, and then it just became random. So bye-bye, Bitly. We'll see what I'll switch to. You know how forever, I mean, this has gone on forever, Boris Johnson and the parties at Downing Street, and, you know, at a time, back in 2020, when the prime minister was urging the entire country to be on lockdown and don't go out unless you have to go to a grocery store and so forth. I cannot believe this is still going on. We have a war in Ukraine, among other things. But the investigative report has just come out saying that, yeah, Bojo's government is responsible. A string of bashers with excessive alcohol consumption. One official boasted in a text about living beyond pandemic rules. Yeah, why should it apply to government officials? Some of these parties went on till nearly dawn. I mean, how did they even govern? There was loud music, dancing, quiz games, and booze. Often lots of it, says the Washington Post. At one such party, one person was sick, vomiting so much from drinking, and two others engaged in a minor altercation. Downing Street staffers were accused of mocking security staff who told them to quiet down. They left rubbish bins overflowing with trash for custodians to deal with. After one party, cleaners had to scrub red wine stains from a wall. This sounds like a lot of drunk people who were running the government. And it's caused, you know, there was a time when it looked like Boris Johnson might have to resign over this. But I think it's kind of ancient history, but maybe I'm sure it's big news in London. All right, we have some serious stories to get to, and a lot of them. So number one, the continuing fallout, numbness, shock, anguish over what happened in Uvalde, Texas. And, you know, new, as is inevitable in these things, new and grisly details are coming out about the shooter. You know, one thing I do like is I think a lot of organizations, and this has been my personal policy for many years, are not naming the shooter. I mean, they might have named him in an initial account, not showing his picture, not giving these people what they want. But new and grisly details coming out. The first thing he did before going to the elementary school was shoot his grandmother. There are reports that are disputed that the police waited something approximating an hour to go into the school. But on the other hand, you know, this was a school in a rural area where, you know, a lot of the law enforcement officers, obviously, either they had gone there or their kids went there. So I don't know exactly what happened there. You know, here's what's going on. And it makes me profoundly sad. You know, I mean, you look at this, it's just so hard to look at the pictures of these 19 kids. It is just so heartbreaking. Okay, so you have the typical, you know, hot air, bloviation. Everybody says the same things that they said after Buffalo, that they said after Orlando, that they said after Las Vegas, that they said after the Brooklyn subway shooting. Remember that? People on the right, who are very pro-gun rights, say even a slightest tightening of background checks is an unconstitutional assault on the Second Amendment. People on the left paint all kinds of sweeping gun control measures as some kind of panacea. Both are untrue. And on the left, anyone who opposes any gun control measure doesn't care about human life. Blood's on their hands and so forth. So then there's this refrain about, no, you're politicizing it. No, you're politicizing it. It just, you know, it just makes my head explode. Okay, so as long as I've been in Washington, when there's some crisis, that's when public attention is highest. And that's when people who want to reform whatever the crisis is, airline safety, food safety, mine safety, or, you know, gun safety, or preventing more of these mass shootings. That's when they want to galvanize support. So now you have conservative gun rights advocates. And by the way, many conservatives, I think, if you're looking at the polls, you're seeing 80, 90% support. And some of these are instant polls, and obviously they're being taken at a very fraught time, for tightening background checks, even maybe 70% support for banning assault weapons. And again, it's not a panacea, and it's not going to prevent every act of violence using guns. But if an illegal immigrant kills someone and there's a national uproar about it, well, people who have a problem with illegal immigration use that to push for tighter border controls. If there is a mass shooting, people who have been arguing for years, going back to Sandy Hook, going back to Columbine, that we need, that there's too many guns in this country and that too many of these guns are getting in the hands of the wrong people, they say that's the time. And so those who say you're politicizing it, really many of them are really saying, let's wait till this dies down and public attention will move on and the media will move on and Texas will just be added to the list of places where terrible massacres took place. Despite the fact that this, you know, I think has just grabbed the country in a way that nothing since Sandy Hook has done, because we're talking about fourth graders here and teachers. If you, in fact, on this question of, you know, sort of using a crisis for political advantage, the 1968 Gun Control Act, LBJ was able to get that passed late in the year of his final year in office because RFK had been murdered and Martin Luther King had been murdered. And I was looking up, it says it banned interstate shipments of firearms and ammunition to private individuals, banned sales of guns to minors, drug addicts, and what were called mental incompetents. It was the first time that mentally imbalanced people, that there was any kind of law saying you couldn't get a gun. Same for convicted felons. It strengthened the licensing and record-keeping requirements for gun dealers. Up until that time, there was no scrutiny of gun dealers, which is important, of course, when you have to trace a gun and find out how a gun was obtained. And look, I've made, and many others have made the point, that many of these guns were legally obtained, and that's part of the problem, by young men who just couldn't wait to turn 18 so they could go shoot up a school or someplace else or a supermarket. New York Times piece, I think, captures the politics quite well. What is the calculation behind Republicans' steadfast opposition to any new gun regulations, even after Uvalde? Well, they asked Republican Senator Kevin Cramer of North Dakota. He said if he would hear from voters back home if he supported any significant form of gun control, most would probably throw me out of office. And that's it in a nutshell. That's why Republicans are resisting, you know, universal background checks, despite, you know, polls showing they're incredibly popular. Now, here's the thing. 90% support in some cases in some polls for these universal background checks. That probably, says the Times, includes some Republicans who are open to modest new laws. But they would not clamor for them or punish a lawmaker who didn't back them. But the 10% who are opposed to such measures, they are activists. They will turn out in primaries. And that's the people who Republican lawmakers are most afraid of, politically speaking. Most Republicans in the Senate represent deeply conservative states where gun ownership is treated as a sacred privilege enshrined in the Constitution. Here's Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming. He's a number three Republican. We don't want to take away the rights of law-abiding citizens. Now, I don't understand why, let's say, stopping people who are mentally unbalanced from getting a modified AR-15 rifle has any effect whatsoever on law-abiding citizens. But that's the thing. Both sides do this. They go to the most extreme case. Oh, you're infringing on gun rights. And on the other side, you know, you don't care about the killing of innocent children. And it's the same debate, and it's the same gridlock, and it's the same thing that people hate about Washington. Nothing will get done. Or there'll be some sort of fig leaf thing that doesn't really change anything. And then the story will fade, and then there'll be another one, another one. In fact, the day after this horrible massacre in Uvalde, Texas, there was a student who was arrested at another Texas high school. Police found an AK-47 style handgun in his car in the parking lot. He was arrested on, you know, unlawful carrying of weapons in a weapon-free school zone. Why would he have that in his car? I mean, I think we're sort of getting into the copycat phase now, which is why I think it's very good that there's very little focus on who these shooters are. Yes, people are doing the, yes, he was bullied as a young man. I don't really give a crap. But you have to wonder whether there's a connection between the 18-year-old in Buffalo, the 18-year-old in Uvalde, Texas, this kid who they didn't even give his age because he's a minor and they didn't release much. Anyway, I think the New York Times story is very instructive. But some Democrats, such as John Tester from Montana, you know, strong pro-gun, mostly red state, are embracing background checks. But the Republicans have dug in, and it's kind of becoming tribal. Here's a quote from Democratic Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts. They're going to rope-a-dope the issue, meaning the GOP, hope that Congress adjourns, and 10 days from now, the furor will once again die down. And I think there's actually a pretty good chance of that happening, although there'll be a lot of coverage tomorrow when the NRA has its convention, where else? In Texas. And Ted Cruz is going to speak, and Governor Abbott is going to speak, and Donald Trump is going to speak. Meanwhile, you know what got a lot of attention just because of it was a sort of a chaotic scene? Beto O'Rourke, the Democratic gubernatorial candidate in Texas, who is going to run against Greg Abbott, he crashed Abbott's press conference and he started shouting. Somebody gave him the mic and he stood up and he said, "You're doing nothing. This is totally predictable." And people on the stage responded vociferously. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick shouting, "I can't believe you're a sick son of a bitch to come to a place like this to make a political issue." Okay, well, was the governor and his lieutenant governor not offering their political views when they talked about guns, mental health, measures that could be taken? Everybody makes it a political issue. Law enforcement officers appeared to escort him out of the news conference. CBS reported that some people had saved seats for O'Rourke. Look, it was a stunt, and I don't think it was a very good stunt. I don't like it at all. You know, if O'Rourke wants to have a news conference 10 minutes later, a half hour later, and gave his views, all the reporters were there, he could do that. Crashing it one day after, you know, the mourning is still going on, the parents are grieving, they've just gotten this horrible news. It does look like he's politicizing it. I always say, you know, both sides play politics, but it was just the wrong tone. It was tone deaf in my view, and I wish he hadn't done it. All right, Elon Musk has weighed in from Twitter saying, "Why is the media doing exactly what the mass murderers want by giving them attention?" Although there's no more details on that. Musk said he supports the Second Amendment as a safeguard against potential tyranny of government, but also supports tighter background checks on gun purchases and limiting the sales of what he described as assault weapons in certain areas facing high gun violence rates. Quote, "I strongly believe the right to bear arms is an important safeguard against potential tyranny." But then Musk moved his base of operations from California to Texas, so he kind of had to speak out. Latest tweet I've seen from Elon, "Assault rifles should, at a minimum, require a special permit where the recipient is extremely well vetted, in my opinion."
Hey, let's pause right there. The Buzz Meter continues right after this. Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, story number two. Ron Brownstein in The Atlantic has a little bit of a different take on this. He sees the gun violence epidemic as reflecting the growing crisis of majority rule in American politics. And this is something that mostly left-leaning people have said when they can't get their way, given the system that, for better or for worse, and God knows it has its weaknesses, has been set up by the Constitution back in 1787. He says, Brownstein writes, gun control is one of many issues in which majority opinion in the nation runs into the brick wall of a Senate rule, the filibuster, that provides a veto over national policy to a minority of states, most of them small, largely rural, predominantly white, and dominated by Republicans. Now, the filibuster, of course, is not in the Constitution. It's not even, you know, it's just something the Senate decided to do. The disproportionate influence of small states has come to shape the competition for national power in America. He points out, and this is just a fact, Democrats have won the popular vote in 7 of the last 8 presidential elections. And yet, Republicans have controlled the White House after 3 of those elections because they won the Electoral College. All right, we'll go form, we'll reform the Electoral College, but that's the system that we have. After Sandy Hook, this Atlantic piece says, the Senate voted on a measure backed by Barack Obama to impose background checks on all gun sales. Again, assigning half of each state's population to each of its senators, the 54 senators who supported the bill represented 194 million Americans. The senators who opposed the bill represented 118 million people, but because of the filibuster rule, it didn't pass. One more statistic here is a Pew poll that found that 81% in this particular survey, Americans support background checks, 63% support an assault weapons ban, which was, of course, passed by Bill Clinton in 94 and repealed a decade later, and a ban on high-capacity ammunition magazines, 64%. Majorities of Republicans who don't own guns shared those opinions, as did Democratic gun owners, by even more lopsided margins. Even most Republicans who do own guns said in this poll they support background checks and oppose permitless concealed carry, which more red states, including Texas, are authorizing. All right, number three. Let's get into the politics of what would have been the big story this week, was it not for this unspeakable tragedy, and that is what happened in Georgia. And I just want to come back now that we have the final turnout figures, because remember, Georgia passed this election law. The media went absolutely bonkers. Jim Crow, President Biden gave a speech. Are you on George Wallace's side? Are you on Bill Connor's side? Or are you on Martin Luther King's side? It had all these terrible provisions. And I understand some of it was controversial. But if the argument was that it was going to prevent people from voting, the numbers have just blown that away. And by the way, where are all the pieces saying, you know what, we were wrong, or in light of new evidence, we have to reconsider? You know, the press is just moving on, as the press loves to do, rather than be accountable for what it's done. Okay, 4 years ago, last midterm election, how many votes were cast in Georgia's Democratic gubernatorial primary? 555,000. This year, 708,000. Even though Stacey Abrams is running unopposed, you know, a lot of people don't turn out because they figure, why bother, she's going to win. So 27% more people voted in the Democratic primary. On the Republican side, turnout increased from 608,000 4 years ago to 1,189,000 in the GOP primary this year. I think we have to acknowledge that and deal with it. And I think the media business has to own up to it. Okay, obviously, Georgia, the turnout there, not the turnout, but the results there were very bad for Donald Trump. He had two guys he wanted to knock off, Republican Governor Brian Kemp and Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State, who got the phone call about, could you just find 11,000 votes? But, I mean, Trump gave an interview just before the voting, the same day voting began, and said, I hear that David Perdue, meaning the candidate he endorsed, is surging. Brian Kemp won by 50 points. This was an unbelievable blowout. And so, and Brad Raffensperger won easily as well. So all of that leads to this story in the Washington Post. Donald Trump has long been the dominant force in Republican politics, but his setbacks in recent weeks, and by the way, he's endorsed some people in contested races that have won as well. Let's be fair about that. He's now talking to advisors and visitors at Mar-a-Lago about who might run against him in 2024, including Mike Pence and Ron DeSantis in Florida. He's had revived conversations about announcing a presidential exploratory committee to try to dissuade challengers, but some party officials and advisors are telling him to wait. Rather than doing it this summer, wait until after the midterms. I mean, Donald Trump announces this summer the entire 2022 elections are about him. That might be good for his ego. I don't think it would be good for Republicans. You could argue that it'll in part be about him anyway. But if he's a declared candidate, the defeats were driven by rival Republican power centers, says this piece. And, you know, trying to prop up Purdue, Trump spent $2.5 million, held a rally in Georgia, relentlessly attacked Kemp, and Purdue still, you know, got his clock cleaned. Privately, the Trump's team expects Republican challengers, potentially including DeSantis, Mike Pence, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and Chris Christie, to come after him in 2024. In other words, to run whether he runs or not. I'm not sure I would have said that, or that you'd be reading a story about that, a few months ago. His own pollster, Tony Fabrizio, says, my guess is a lot of people run against him. Moving right along, Politico has a kind of a same story but different take rather than looking at Trump world. Politico says that Republicans are weary of the incessant conflicts, the inability to get past the 2020 election results, and endorsement strategy seemingly driven by a bruised and restless ego rather than the party's best interests. And therefore says, you know, that partially explains what's happening in Georgia. You know, it points to people like George W. Bush, Pence, Christie, all showing up in Georgia, kind of defying Trump's endorsement to campaign for Governor Brian Kemp. Few in the party doubt, well, this you have to admit, that Trump still maintains an iron grip on his base. And that his endorsements, you know, are very influential. But to many, says Politico, Trump's habit of rolling grenades into Republican primaries is getting old. Here's an on-the-record quote from Chris Christie. We have to be the party of tomorrow, not the party of yesterday. What we have to decide is, do we want to be the party of me or the party of us? What Donald Trump has advocated is for us to be the party of me, that everything has to be about him and his grievances. Trump picked this fight, says the former New Jersey governor. Also in the news on the Trump front, New York Times story, and this was a leak out of the House January 6th committee. Mark Meadows, on January 6th, went into the Oval Office and told colleagues that President Trump was complaining that Vice President Pence was being whisked to safety. Now, I know that's kind of hard to process. According to an account given to the House committee, Meadows told a colleague that Trump had said something to the effect of, maybe Pence should be hanged. Now, we don't know, as the Times says, we don't know what the tone of voice was. Was it a grim joke or something like that? But the reported remark was further evidence of how extreme the rupture between the president and his VP has become. This was accounted by sources, two people briefed. Another witness, a former aide to Mark Meadows, confirmed the remark. Lawyer for Meadows says he has every reason to believe the account is untrue. Spokesman for Trump. This partisan committee's vague leaks, anonymous testimony, and willingness to alter evidence proves it's just an extension of the Democrats' smear campaign that has been exposed time and time again for being fabricated and dishonest. All right, number four. This Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial seems to be winding up. That's a relief. It seems like it's gone on forever. Okay, so Johnny Depp was called back to the stand to respond to his ex-wife's accusations. He called the accusations of sexual and physical abuse insane. He also said they were ridiculous, humiliating, ludicrous, painful, savage, unbelievably brutal, cruel, and all false. And so he responded to some of the particular details of Amber Heard's accusations, saying, "I've never in my life committed sexual battery, physical abuse, all these outlandish, outrageous stories of me committing these things and living with it for 6 years and waiting to be able to bring the truth out." Depp has denied that he's ever struck Amber Heard, and then says that she was the abuser in the relationship. Amber Heard has testified about more than a dozen separate instances of physical abuse that she says she suffered at Johnny Depp's hands. And I just have to say, I know just from talking to people in my civilian life that a lot of folks, because of the televised nature of it and just, you know, to once high-flying Hollywood stars, a lot of people are addicted to this trial. A whole lot of other people could care less about this. But the one thing I know, and regardless who wins, remember, it's a libel suit because of what Amber Heard wrote in the Washington Post several years ago, saying she was a victim of domestic abuse, not mentioning Depp, but everybody knows who she was talking about. I don't care how this comes out. They're both losers. They both have been exposed as horrible human beings. And all the people who like love Johnny Depp and think Amber Heard is a creep and a loser and she's making stuff up, I don't know. I don't see how you spin this one. I don't see how. It just seems to me that both of them have screwed their careers. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time feeling sorry for them either.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
All right, number five, just some digital stuff to catch up with here. I talked about Twitter earlier. Federal regulators announcing yesterday that Twitter will pay a $150 million fine to settle allegations that it deceptively used email addresses and phone numbers that it collects as part of the registration process to target advertising, one of the largest privacy settlements that the feds have reached with a technology giant. The FTC and the Justice Department said that Twitter will be banned from profiting off the deceptively collected data and be required to notify the more than 140 million users who were affected that use their phone numbers and email addresses for advertising. You know, you don't think it's being shipped out to those folks. And Elon Musk characterized, took this on, saying, well, if they lied about this, what else are they not telling the truth about? At the same time, Musk has upped the cash portion of his offer. Remember, this is a $44 billion bid for Twitter. And he basically says, I'm going to kick in about another $6 billion in equity. Putting, you know, it's like when you buy a house, you put a bigger down payment down. That reduces the amount of money that he will have to borrow in order to make this deal go. He's still looking for other investors to join him. I guess there are still questions about whether or not he'll be able to pull this off. If not, he faces the prospect of a $1 billion breakup fee. So he's sweetening the offer a little bit. I think he also is determined to get the price down, given where the stock is. And that's a common thing in these corporate takeover battles. You know, you make a bid and the stock is at 20, and then later on the stock is at 10, and the company's worth, at least in the eyes of Wall Street, half as much. So we'll see how that plays out. And because you were dying to know this, a piece in Vice talks about artificial intelligence, which always kind of creeps me out. A new study shows that humans can learn new things from artificial intelligence systems and pass them on to other humans in ways that could potentially influence human culture. Okay, so this is getting a little bit creepy. The study was published by this group that studies such things, Center for Humans and Machines at the Max Planck Institute for Human Development, says that while this is the funny part, while humans can learn from algorithms how to better solve certain problems, human biases prevented performance improvements from lasting as long as expected. Humans tended to prefer solutions from other humans, imagine that, over those proposed by algorithms because they were more intuitive or were less costly up front, even if they paid off more later. And then the piece comes out and says the idea that machine learning can influence human learning and culture throughout generations is a frightening one. It is kind of frightening, but I mean, I suppose it's already a process that's underway. We train computers to do things, and then we pick up from that. I mean, how many, especially younger people today, could even read a map, right? I used to struggle with that. You unfold it, and it's all in pieces, and have to figure out whether to go east or west. Everybody just turns on the GPS on their phone or their separate device, and they follow the directions. May not be good directions. May take you right into a traffic jam. I'm not supposed to do that.
So that's a simplistic example. So what's the specifics here? Here's one example from the Vice story. A Chinese strategy board game called Go saw an algorithm called AlphaGo beat the human world champion in 2016. Well, you know, computers have been beating prominent chess players for years and years. So that's not new. But here's the thing. AlphaGo made moves that were extremely unlikely to be made by human players and were learned by self-play instead of analyzing human data. In other words, the AI here was so smart by running through, you know, 10 zillion possible scenarios, it did things that normal people, I shouldn't say normal, just people, regular old people, would never do, and it learned to play better than people. The algorithm was made public in 2017, and such moves have become more common among human players, suggesting a hybrid form of social learning between human and algorithms is actually possible. So I don't know. It's hurting my head, but I got to think through what are the implications for society, and do I want an algorithm telling me what to do? You know, it's kind of like on Twitter, Musk talks about this. I just want the latest tweets, and you can do that. You can select it easily. Musk says everyone should do that. I don't want Twitter's algorithm telling me what tweets it thinks I should see first. Thank you very much, Mr. Algorithm, but I will decide that on my own. I would prefer to see everybody on my list. Not those who were shadow banned. I want to see those too. In real time. And then I can say, you know, if I'm not interested, I just scroll a little faster and go back to the older stuff. So, people versus machines. The new struggle in America. Hey, thanks for listening. These seem like particularly perilous times. And I'm glad to have an opportunity to share what I think with you. I'll put in a little plug for subscribing. Apple iTunes is a good place to do it. Back here tomorrow with more BuzzMeter.
Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.